Good evening, everybody. James McKenna here with my Science Hour. This is for October 19th. Yes, October 19th, 2023. Thank you for listening. And talking about listening, there's some changes in my frequency. So this is the last week that the show will air on 9.350 megahertz from WWCR, changing to 5.935 next week. And I've got a discussion here coming up in this show about what's been going on. Now, we've been monitoring this show and many points around the USA and around the world. And what's been going on is in certain what you call markets, it's been blocked on the internet streaming. So if you were looking on, there's various applications like Radio Garden or all of the, there's many radio listening applications where you go in, and because the streaming from WWCR has been blocked, and only for my show. So clearly somebody is blocking my show from airing on the internet. Apparently, I'm getting into topics that somebody doesn't want you to hear, but they can't block the shortwave. And so it would be impossible for them because the shortwave goes up to the ionosphere and bounces down. And so it would be impossible for them. I mean, they could potentially block it from the source. But I mean, it would, somebody'd have to go to an awful lot of trouble. And then the station would be aware of it. All kinds of other things would be going on. So the best way to listen to my radio show, and I have said this all along, is get a shortwave radio and tune in and start doing that, because things in the world, if you haven't noticed, are getting more and more crazy with this deal in the Gaza Strip in Israel. I'll talk a little bit about that. I don't want to get too much into that because there's a lot of people discussing this, and so when a lot of people discuss it, I tend not to. But I mean, these are earth-changing events. Turns out that Biden, or the would say the Biden administration, because whoever is acting as Joe Biden is not Joe Biden. Apparently, they have multiple actors that sit in for Joe to make it, anyway, absolutely bonkers. But, yeah, the world is really going nuts. And so, listening on shortwave is imperative. It's something that not only my show, but other shows, shortwave will be returning as the media of choice for people, because the internet is simply being blocked. And so this started a number of weeks ago where we were getting reports that people couldn't tune into my show streaming, and I monitor the show also. I have ways of monitoring, and then we started checking with other people in other areas. And here's what would happen is you'd go to the streaming and it would say it's just not there. Or the mechanism, if you go right to WWCR.com, tower number two streaming, what's supposed to happen is this little thing is supposed to pop up. It's supposed to load. It's like a MP3 show kind of, but it's actually live streaming, and it goes into this application and it plays. I don't know how it all works, but that's what it looks like to you as a computer user. And so people go there, and when my show starts, it doesn't work. The show afterwards, the show before work, but not mine. And so it's clearly being blocked on the internet. And at first, of course, the people at the station looked and they go, "Oh, it's working right in here." Yeah, well, in the Nashville area, it was working, but it was not getting out from there, because on the internet, the internet feed has to go through multiple points and multiple points of hardware, multiple servers, and so it has to propagate. through the internet, and so if there are places where they're going to block content, they can do that at these hubs. Okay, this doesn't get to go out on the internet. And so this has been happening. I've been getting reports from people. Also, I apologize. I've been very busy lately, kind of putting out fires, let's put it that way, not literal fires, but all kinds of things going on that require my kind of constant attention. And so as a result, I've not had time to post my shows on the archive page. So therefore, people who go, "Well, it wasn't on the archives." I told people, don't be lazy, get a shortwave radio, and here are the frequencies once again. The Tonight Show is airing on 9.350 megahertz. Next week, it will be at 5.935 megahertz. And on my webpage, and for many years, it has simulcast on 6.115, but that's going away. This show tonight will be the last show where that airs, and then another person has bought that airtime, has purchased that airtime. So I don't even know what show is going to be on there. But 6.115 is going away in terms of my show. The station has sold that time to someone else, and so I'm back to my 9.350 slot. And then, like I say, next week, 5.935 megahertz starting next week, November, I think it's November 2nd is the Thursday. I don't have a calendar in front of me, but I think it's November 2nd. We'll start the 5.935. So get a shortwave radio and use it. Listen to my show on shortwave. So don't depend on the archives, don't depend on streaming, don't depend on other methods of listening. It does air, the archives do get posted on other venues, kind of like, oh, there's Buzzsprout and there's other venues. I've heard that it's being posted on other places as well, the live show or the archives. However, there again, don't depend on those. And those are out there, those are like fishing hooks. And so people that are going through, say, Buzzsprout, just surfing, so to speak, come across it and they go, "Oh, this looks interesting." They download it, listen, and then they become listeners. And then maybe they'll go to my Patreon channel and donate, which is something I'm going to recommend also. If you're listening to the show weekly, my Patreon channel, which is linked from my webpage, so go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, and there's a link for Patreon, and it'll take you right to my Patreon channel. And I think I'm not going to give it because I don't remember it offhand, but just go to my webpage, follow the link, it's at the top of the page for Patreon channel. And put in a weekly donation. It could be as little as like $5, I think, or it could be a lot. And what that does is it helps me pay for my airtime, the web page, all of the stuff that goes along with doing what I do. And then, of course, I sell the water filters, have my books, etc. These are not highly profitable businesses. They're like I was on a radio show the other day, and I said I'd probably make more money if I worked at McDonald's. I mean, not McDonald's aircraft. I'm talking about McDonald's hamburger stand. Because it takes a full-time dedication to do everything that I do, and get the show out to you, etc. So it would be nice if you're listening. Just go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, click on my Patreon channel, and put in a little donation or whatever you can afford. And if you're well off, put in more, because what you're doing is helping other people also get this information. But anyway, what I was saying is that my webpage is brand new. It got loaded about 2 weeks ago, and that was kind of an effort. It got hacked twice while it was being loaded. The new web page would get up there, and like 6 hours later, it would be gone. Some other crazy web page was slapped on top of mine. And so that took a little bit of doing to get that fixed. And so, yes, somebody out there does not like what I'm talking about. And of course, I'm guest on many other shows. And for example, I made the comment on another radio show that when you look at the events in Gaza, like the hospital being blown up and things like this, it's somebody out there that's throwing gasoline on the fire. First of all, they blamed it on Israel and a lot of hatred. How could you kill these innocent people in a hospital? Only to realize that it really probably was not Israel and it was not Hamas. Well, who's doing this? Who's fueling the flames over there? Who's going to benefit? So anyway, it's just crazy. But I made the comment, and it's probably well should be well taken, that whenever one of these events starts and we Ukraine dropped off the edge of the earth, you don't even hear about Ukraine anymore, even though they're still sending, tens, hundreds of billions of dollars there. Now they want to send $100 billion to Israel. Well, wait a minute, Israel is already armed to the teeth compared to Hamas and the Palestinians who are, just being driven out of this area. But the end result is that's the end result, that they're being driven out of there. I was on Jeff Rentz the other night and talking about that I was on also with Keith Roberts as a guy that has a show on Revolution Radio. I was a guest there the other night and mentioning that also, that whenever any of these things happen, the end result, what is the end result? Well, they're going to clear all the people out of the Gaza Strip, and that's the end result. So who does that benefit? Well, it benefits a lot of people who want to invest in that. That's prime real estate, the West Bank. And historically, and for development of what, here's what they're doing. They have picked certain areas of the world where they want to develop property. Lahaina is one of them. They just, scorched the people out of there and killed tens of thousands of people in Lahaina, of Hawaiian people whose families had lived there forever. But somebody in the higher up of whatever, New World Order, whatever you want to call them, have decided that Lahaina was an area they want to develop a modern city, a planned city where everything is within walking distance, all the food is grown there. It's this idealistic modern city, I don't forget what they call it, eco city, whatever. And Lahaina is one of those areas. Well, Gaza Strip is another one. And so they're picking these areas, and it's a scorched earth policy where you just blow up everything, force all the people out, let them go as refugees to wherever, nobody cares, and then in come the developers and make it into a mecca, like Dubai. This is the Dubai model, you might call it that, where they come in and build this glorious city. And this is the way of the future. So they don't care about the people that live there. They are valueless. They are less than the dirt on the ground in terms of value for these people who are doing this. And of course, they are using laser technology, or like in the case of Lahaina, microwave to burn everything to a crisp. And then just all the people leave and don't have any money and have no livelihood, so they just go away. And then they report that, oh, 100 dead in Lahaina. What? There's probably 10,000 people dead in Lahaina. They blocked the traffic from getting out, so the people couldn't get out, so they died in their cars trying to escape. A few people were able to make it to the water, where they were, maybe 10 people where they were then rescued by a boat. But, the sirens didn't work. There was no water available to put out the fires. You know, the way the whole thing came down, and just Lahaina burned. Nothing around it. There was no wildfires that came through. The sustained winds, where they had dry winds blowing this, even though there was supposedly a hurricane in the area, there was no rain. It's just insanity. If you look at all the things that went on, where the people had no notification that this thing was coming. But this is the same, the end effect. This is what I'm talking about. The end effect is that all the people have to leave. And then in come the developers. Oh, isn't that swell? We're just going to develop this and it's going to be really great. And that's the end effect. So I made this comment on the air that, as with the Bay of Tonkin or the, Pearl Harbor in World War II, or 9/11 or COVID or any of these things that are planned events, that they start with some kind of event and that kicks off the news cycle, which then carries this. And, just absolute insanity. But the people buy it hook, line, and sinker. And then it's on to the next story, then on to the next story, then on to the next one. I think they're trying to silence the idea that this is just part of a much bigger agenda of scorching out these areas of Earth that they have selected. And let's face it, there's a lot of prime property around the planet. I mean, you could pick next to the Grand Canyon. There's millions of acres available there. Why do they have to burn out these specific areas where there are people already? Well, just leave them and find another place. There's, in fact, in the Hawaiian Islands, there's 1,000 places that you could develop very nicely. And no, but they needed Lahaina. That's something about Lahaina that they wanted. Something about the Gaza Strip that they want. And all of the rest of these people are just pawns in the big game of, Anyway, so I made this comment on a radio show, and I think those are the type of comments that they don't want airing out there. And then the end result, of course, $100 billion to Israel. Israel doesn't need $100 billion. They'd, for what? They're already armed to the teeth. They have been for decades. They don't need any more military. And, the damage is in Gaza, not in Israel. There's some damage in Israel, enough to get this thing going. And how did, when you look at the very beginning where these guys parachute in with arms and shoot up areas right off of the military bases, heavily, the most heavily guarded, heavily fortified military bases in Israel, these guys come in paratrooping in with these, hang glider things and are able to cause all this tremendous damage. Nobody, even though they were warned that this was a potential for attack. And Israel was like, oh, gee, what's going on here? Right off of their major military bases and didn't react. It was, it was like a planned event. Excuse me. So, anyway, when you start talking like this, they don't want this. They want their story out there in the news media. And that's why I'm saying, get a shortwave radio. If you go, oh, gee, the archives aren't there. Well, get your lazy butt out of your chair. Go down, get a shortwave radio and start listening to shortwave. That's it kind of went away. People got lazy because the internet, there was so much available on the internet. But the internet is not going to be there forever. Believe me, they're going to shut that baby down. And in like the case of my show, they don't care about 99% of the content out there. They just don't want their narrative being contradicted or anybody talking, saying something different. Okay, so just in summary here, next week, starting what is it, November 2nd, something like that. Or wait, okay, I'm going to actually go to the text here. The frequency changes. So October 26th, which will be next week, will be the last week. Okay, so what I said before was a bit incorrect. October 26th, which is next week, will be the last broadcast at 9.350. Okay, so forget what I said before. I'm sorry. Made a mistake here. It just shows I'm human. Huh. Too many things going on. So October 26th next week will be the last week on 9.350 megahertz. Okay, so if you wrote something down, just cross it out. October 26th next week will be the last week on 9.350. November 2nd broadcast will be the first one on 5.935 megahertz. And that will run through to March 10th of 2024. And then on March 14th, 2024, we'll go back to the 9.350. Okay, so there we go. That's the correct story. And the 6.115 megahertz is going away right now. My show is not going to air on 6.115 anymore. Yeah, so anyway, and that's on WWCR tower number 2. And so those are the frequencies. But I don't know which tower they were airing me on 6.115. But anyway, that's going away right now. That will not be there. And I've had people pull that in because they seem to get that better. And they were saying, well, they couldn't hear it anymore. So I don't know what the story is there, but yeah, 6.115 is going away, and I'll have to update that on my web page, and I have to get my archives updated on the web page. And yeah, it's just been hectic here, trying to keep up with all of the stuff that's going on, crazy stuff, just craziness, and trying to maintain all of the things that I have to do. So I'll try and get the archives posted, and they go on my Patreon channel. The Patreon channel has not been updated. My own web page archives for my show have not been updated, and like other places like Buzzsprout have not been updated. So I'll get those done hopefully in the next week. And talking about updating things, the JMCC water filters page, there's a sale on. It's been there. It was actually started for Labor Day. And the MR5 whole house water filter, the best deal, what we call the best deal, it's the MR5, the UV sterilizer, and an extra set of filter elements for the MR5, typically $2380, was on sale for like $1,000 off to promote sales. And those are less than break even pricing. And next Sunday, sometime next Sunday, probably evening or closer to later Sunday night, those prices are going to change, and I will get in and change those prices. So if you've been sitting on the fence wondering if you should buy it or not, and people say, well, if I buy it in 2 weeks, can I get the same price? Probably not. I'm not going to do that. I can't extend those sales. If people have had plenty of time to order. If you don't get your order in by Sunday, then the prices are going to go back up to normal. And so, anyway, just letting you know that if you're interested in the gravity filters, the replacement filters for the gravity filters, and people always ask, is I'm not even going to say the name on the air because all of the crazy stuff going on, but just gravity, you know what they are, the stainless steel, two containers, one sits on top of the other one. You pour the water in the top, it filters through and goes to the bottom. My filters are the best on the planet, and they're the cheapest. They're the lowest price per unit. They're high flow rate. You only need one of them at a time, not three or four or something. And so, anyway, those never go on sale. because it's just not necessary. They're already at a really ridiculously low price. Sometimes think about raising the price, but there's a lot of people out there, like just a story. I had this couple call me, and they wanted to put in an order for four of the what I call HI, the HI, that's the new code name for the technology, gravity water filters, and they wanted a four pack, and they were very excited. And so anyway, I took their order, and they said, "Yeah, we've been saving up for months for this." And I'm like, "Oh my goodness, this is like $189, and these people are saving to afford a four pack of my filter elements." And the people out there are hurting. And so I thought, I should be able to raise my price, because everybody else that sells a gravity water filter element, they're selling them for like two for like $180 or something. Craziness. And they're 20 or 25 year old technology. They're really not that great a filter. And I have a much better filter. So I could raise my prices, but I'm just not going to. I'm going to keep them where they are. And those don't go on sale, but they're already at very good prices. And then I should mention too, the make your own filter, which is you go out and buy plastic containers. If you can drill into stainless steel, you could buy stainless steel containers, whatever, or what do they call those? Like any type of stackable containers. But the directions that are posted on the web page tell you where to go, where to buy food grade plastic containers that are stackable, and then you drill a few holes, which anybody can do, and then you get this really marvelous stainless steel spigot, which, by the way, does not fit your standard gravity stainless steel container. It's a bigger, really a really nice stainless steel spigot, and then two or four or 10 pack of my filter elements, and it's a make your own. And so that's what people have been doing also. If you up at the cabin or on for a bug out bag or for up at camp or something like that, you want an extra filter. That's an inexpensive way to get a filter, without paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars. So you get $20 more for this stainless steel spigot, and it really just covers my cost. I'm not making a lot on the spigot, but it's a way for people to get my filter elements and make a really nice filter. And some people go, "Well, I don't like plastic." Well, if you're up at camp or the cabin, and you're using this thing, occasionally, then you're not going to die. The food grade plastic today is really good, and I use plastic stuff, food grade plastic, and so it's not going to kill you overnight by using it a few times. And there are people who use it for their main filter in their house, because that's the only way they can afford to have one, So anyway, it's the make your own. And then I have a marvelous stainless steel sink filter, which is really, I mean, it is just a classy, classy looking piece of stainless steel hardware for a very good price. In fact, I can't believe how low the price is on this thing. And then you can get it with either four or 10 filter elements. Anyway, okay, enough about that. The jmccwaterfilters.com webpage. Go there, and that sale on the MR5 and Best Deal package going away Sunday for sure. That's going to be the end of that sale, and you'll never ever see those prices come back again. Okay, a couple of scientific topics here I want to cover. NASA is going full steam ahead for its mission on Mars, and this is, for me, it's just insanity. It's just a craziness. Planning a mission to Mars. Now, here's a space agency that the claim is they went to the moon, and people go, "Oh, well, McCanny is a moon denier or whatever." No, my official statement is that it's an unverified scientific claim. That's right on my webpage. Unverified scientific claim, because in science, you have to have third-party verification. Okay, so what does that mean? That means it's some independent party that doesn't have an axe to grind, either way, plus or negative, goes up and with independent equipment and analysis verifies the scientific claim. In this case, is there really stuff on the moon? And of course, NASA had their Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter thing that they spent months promoting, and oh, we're going to finally get great pictures of the lunar landing sites. And they finally come out, and then it was done by the University of Arizona. And these clowns don't release the data for 6 months. And then all of a sudden they come out with these, oh, here are the amazing photographs. And your 1990s cell phone camera could have done better. Couple pixels, like 2 or 3 pixels, and then little line scratches where the supposedly the rover went. And this is what they come up with. I mean, good grief. It was stupid. But anyway, NASA shouldn't be verifying its own scientific claim in the first place. So the whole thing was stupid. It was just a way to pawn off another fake story onto the public, thanks to the University of Arizona Astronomy, Astrophysics, and Space Science groups, which have, they're instrumental also in a lot of other bad information. Since I was at Cornell, they were involved in this, covering up the idea that comets are not dirty snowballs, preferential treatment for their scientists in publications. The list of scientific corruption just goes on and on. So anyway, but the idea that NASA is going to go to Mars now, they have the space station, they got some astronauts there, and the Russians have some cosmonauts, but what I understand with that is they're going to send it into the atmosphere and burn it up like a crisp. And so anyway, craziness again there. But they're going full bore ahead with this mission to Mars. I don't know. If you are going to go to Mars, you first have to get out from Earth's low Earth orbit and do things in even a higher orbit, 500 miles, 1,000 miles. But they don't do it. Why? Because the Van Allen belts are there. And the Van Allen belts, what happens is it's a what I call local electrical battery, LEBs. If you look in my weather book, I talk about these. And the Van Allen belts are a perfect example. It's a ring of protons going one direction, a ring of electrons going the other direction. And what does that do? That gives you a pretty good battery. So now when you're flying between these, they will discharge. And that's what happens, is it's the discharge where those electrons in the discharge, because the electrons are the primary charge carriers, because the lower it's the higher charge to mass ratio than the protons. And so anyway, the electrons are the primary carriers, and when they hit metal in the spacecraft, they turn into X-rays. That's the problem. That's what nobody wants to talk about. That's what Elon Musk doesn't know about. He wants to go to the moon. He wants to go to Mars. Everybody's going up the, everybody's going to go to Mars. Well, let me tell you, boys and girls, ain't nobody going to Mars. Ain't nobody going to the moon. And which brings up a funny thing. The other day, I think it was on space.com, they showed a studio in, like, I didn't know where the studio was, but the Artemis is the lunar lander program of NASA, and it showed astronauts pretending to be on the moon. In this moon setting, it was just like the Apollo with Stanley Kubrick, who filmed the The 2001, of course, and the feature movie also filmed the NASA footage, is the story. I wasn't there personally, but that's the story. Stanley Kubrick was in charge of all the special effects needed to make it look like NASA went to the moon. And of course, that's where his movie Eyes Wide Shut with Tom Cruise, have you ever seen that movie? Pretty weird. But the idea was that these groups are off in this it's a kind of a strange world, let's put it that way. But the NASA, the whole issue of going to the moon, if it's so easy to get up into the Van Allen belts, they certainly have the capability with test spacecraft, etc. And when they sent up the Artemis space craft with unmanned, they supposedly had sensors in it. They didn't have any sensors for X-rays. So, but maybe they did, but they didn't talk about it. And they, oh, it's successful. No, it was not successful. Because you cannot send the person in a metal spacecraft up into the Van Allen belts. It's that simple. The Russians tried to go to the moon in the 1960s. They fully had the capability to send a man to orbit the moon and come back. Not a problem. It's just outer space, What's the difference? And these guys, these cosmonauts, came back very dead. And this is what Russian scientists told me. That and they just never went back because it's that crossing the Van Allen belts is the problem. And so that's why when the claim that Apollo program went to the moon successfully like 11 times or something, whatever it was, that the Russians just shook their heads and they knew that it was all fakery. And that's of course. There have been people recently that have asked Russian scientists if they can investigate to see what Russia knows about the Apollo moon landings. And they don't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. They're not allowed to. Because in the science world, there's a ownership, let's put it that way, worldwide. There's an ownership of outer space, and that is by the banking cartels, of which the CIA is the universal police force, the worldwide police force. And interestingly enough, Russia stepped out of this with Putin. And interestingly enough, Russia is the country that the United States is supposed to be, the country with freedom, with. And of course, with the war in Ukraine, freedom of speech has somewhat been curtailed. But in terms of, honesty and science, let's put it that way, Russia is light years ahead of the United States. The United States has an extremely corrupt scientific world, and that includes medicine, dentistry, science in general, space science, geology, and, like I say, all the garbage science, tier two science that's passed down to the public. But NASA going to Mars? I don't think so. There's another NASA program called Viper. And this is now a drill. A drill. Meaning a probe that they want to send up to the moon and then drill into the moon, into the moon's surface. Well, let me tell you something, boys and girls, you would have to drill an awful, awful long ways to get down to the real surface of the moon, which may have had an atmosphere at one time. There's indications on the moon of rivers, like water rivers, and other structures that you just can't explain without something liquid flowing there. So maybe it wasn't water, maybe it was something else. Some other kind of liquid, but water is the most likely candidate. And so the moon has these various structures on it that make it look like it is, but to have rivers and water, then it had to have had an atmosphere. So did the moon have an atmosphere at one point? And the answer is that Very likely it did, but it could have been removed, just like Mars had its atmosphere removed when Venus the comet came through. It makes an electrical connection, and whoosh, away goes the lunar atmosphere or the Mars atmosphere. And that's what happened. The ancients saw it. Mars used to be a blue planet. And that's in all of the ancient records. Mars was a blue planet, just like Earth. It used to come closer to Earth. There may have been transportation between Earth and Mars at one point. Anyway, going on and on about Mars, but the idea of the moon, the surface of the moon is what you would detect on the surface of the moon. You'd have to go down an awful long way to find the original lunar surface because stuff is falling in on the moon all the time. Tons and tons per day of stuff is falling on the moon. So to imagine that the lunar surface is somehow the lunar surface, well, it's just not true. So anyway, the idea that you're going to send a drill to the moon and drill down and learn something about the original status of the moon. And this leads up to another topic. I believe I talked about this last week. It's called Psyche. P-S-Y-C-H-E. And that's the name of an asteroid, a fairly big one, a fairly big chunk of rock out in the asteroid belt. And Elon Musk is part of this. I don't know how much of a hand he has in all the in the probe itself, but he's launching the SpaceX Falcon Heavy launched the payload last week, and now it's on its way to this asteroid, which apparently is rich in metal. And so the first thing is to go out there and find out what this, you know, what's really there and evaluate it. And then I'm sure the second probe would be to go out and grab some of this metal and bring it back to Earth. And there's, for a long time, for long, long before Elon Musk was ever on the scene, people realized that of an asteroid that had, say it had platinum, a couple, you know, big deposits of platinum or iron ore or nickel or any of the other commercially valuable metals, or things like lithium, you know, or other materials, that it could literally change the economy of the world. Or how about gold? How about silver? An asteroid made of gold. This sounds like a James Bond plot, where some guy with rich, you know, beyond imagination, has enough money to build a spacecraft to go out and mine gold and change the entire economy of the world. And of course, James Bond would have to go solve it with all the adventure and whatever that goes with it. That's what it sounds like, almost. But this is a real story, and it's a real asteroid, and it has real value, and probably enough to where it would change the economy of the world if they were able to harvest this. But as I said before, things have a funny way of turning around, and who knows? Maybe people would fund me, and I'd go out and start mining it before Elon Musk would. That would be an interesting twist of fate, where they go out and do the initial drilling, because it's just like any other natural resource. It's yours if you get there to get it first. If you don't get there first, then you can't claim ownership. And so, anyway, that brings up the point of militarizing outer space. And the Trump thing, which is, space a long, long time ago, there were international, proclamations and agreements that space should not be used for warfare. That it should be used for the benefit of all mankind. Well, that didn't last long. That didn't last long at all. It's a good intention, it's a good thought, but it's not going to happen. And just remember that The frequency change, like I said before, the November 2nd show will air on the 5.935 megahertz. The 6.115 megahertz show is going away. That's no longer there. And my show will air on 9.350 this week and next week only. Then we'll go to the next week, November 2nd, on to 5.935 megahertz. And that's for the winter up until March 10th will be the last show on the wintertime frequency, and then it will change back to the summertime frequency of 9.350 because my show is right at that 6 o'clock hour. And what happens is that the daytime frequencies work better in the daytime for shortwave, and the nighttime frequencies work better at the night. Well, I'm right at the cusp where it's changing between day and nighttime, right around that change of the seasons, the springtime and the fall equinox and the springtime. And so that's why they're changing frequencies for me. I don't know if how many other shows that have to go through this, but mine gets that change at that certain hour. They still broadcast on those frequencies, but it changes. They don't air the winter time frequency in the summer and vice versa. Okay,
I'm going to jump back to this topic of NASA going to Mars, NASA going to the moon, you know, different things. And I want to talk about some electrical issues in outer space. And these are things, of course, you don't hear about. But here's one, that the dust on the moon is electrically charged. And it's like if you're in a, it's kind of like one of those unsung things. When you see the Apollo footage of the alleged Apollo landing on the moon, you see them jumping around and you see this dust kind of bouncing up and then falling back down. That's not what would happen on the moon. The moon, the dust is like electrified, and it would coat the very quickly. It would coat all of the astronauts' clothing and their glass helmet, the face part of the glass helmet, and all of that. So I mean, they would be covered, literally covered with dust, and it would get worse and worse. And then when they got back into the space capsule, there would be no way to get rid of all of this. And when they came walking off the plank, where they showed them waving at the cameras, they would be so full of dust, it would be not funny. And that would be kind of a legitimate concern, because there might be viruses. There are other, who knows, some kind of vacuum space bacteria that lives on the moon that would contaminate these guys. But no, they come out like they just walked out of, you know, Macy's with their brand new shining space suit. And that's not the way it would be at all. So another indicator that the moon mission was totally faked and these guys never went to the moon and they, you know, but there again, I have to say my official scientific decision on this is that the moon landing, the alleged Apollo lunar landings, multiple lunar landings, were highly questionable, highly questionable. And I was on a radio show the other day, and this topic kind of came up, and I mentioned those amazing, for 1960s technology, these amazing batteries on the Apollo mission. Now, these are batteries that don't weigh anything. They can't be seen. They're so small. They could fit into the corner of the spacecraft. And they provide power for compressing air, for decompressing air, for all of the life support systems that run on the Apollo spacecraft, which are constant. You know, the recycling of air, that carbon dioxide that the astronauts are breathing out, and breathing in and changing it back to oxygen When they get out of the lunar lander, they got to, you know, they have to open the doors, but there's no air on the moon to get back, so they have to compress the air that's in the lunar lander and into containers. That's a big job. That's a big energy job. And so plus now when they're out in the sun, this baby is cooking. We're up to a couple thousand degrees, so they got to have an air conditioner that air conditioning is a very big expensive electrical load. And then when it's in the cold time of the day of the night, moon lunar night, then they would have to heat it because it would be down to extremely low temperatures. And all of this is expended energy that is lost. It's not somehow regainable. It's a single-threaded process. It's irreversible. It's no way that you're going to store energy or recoup energy. So this is energy that these amazing Apollo batteries would have to use. And I was kidding on this radio show. I said, I want me some of them there Apollo batteries. If you ever see them on Craigslist, please let me know, because I want to buy some for my home electrical backup system. I want me some of them there Apollo lunar landing batteries. Maybe they might be for sale used on Craigslist or eBay. But if you see some, let me know, because I want some of them there batteries. Because they got to be the best ones ever invented or manufactured in the history of the world. Oh, gee. You know, if you look at from just an electrical point of view and the batteries, these amazing batteries, because they didn't have solar panels. We know that. There were no solar panels. There was no other source of energy. And, you know, so where did this amazing amount of energy come from? And how come that technology died with the Apollo space program? How come it was never offered to usins out here in the general public? So anyway, just another thing. But the back to the electrical part, yeah, the astronauts' suits would be covered almost instantaneously with dust. And in terms of going to Mars, you have somewhat of a similar situation. The ground level, very low pressure atmosphere is conducive to electrification of dust particles. So I got a kick out of watching this one program. It was Let's All Go to Mars. I can't remember the Mars, you know, and they had these, a group of women, they were panelists up on a stage, and they were just giddy about putting on their little backpacks and going for a hike on Mars. They're going to go like down the hiking trail. And let me tell you something. There are winds on Mars that dwarf anything on Earth. Hundreds and hundreds of miles an hour. But it's not just wind. It's dust storms that would, like, take the paint off your car in about 10 seconds. And so if you have a nice, bright, painted spacecraft, it ain't going to be nice and bright and painted very much longer on Mars. And so the only way to survive this would be in some kind of underground bunker. And literally, because anything on the surface is going to have just be sandblasted. And if you know anything about sandblasting, it's a very effective way to clean stuff. Clean off the surface and take away even metal surfaces if it's there long enough. So your handy-dandy spacecraft is going to take a real beating, a real beating. And so, you know, and there's no way of getting around this. I've often said that a wise space program manager would say, look, we're not going to land all this equipment and all these astronauts and everything that's the life support system. We're not going to land it on the moon or Mars. We're just going to orbit. We're going to put in some kind of like a space station around the moon or around Mars. And then we're going to send, you know, satellites down, which also begs the point, why not just do it all with unmanned probes? But the idea is that we want to get men into outer space, the human race, so to speak. But as with all NASA programs, this manned space program is only meant for NASA and NASA astronauts. It's not meant for you, the public. You're only supposed to pay for it and watch at a distance on your TV set. And root for NASA and the boys there as they go out to the moon and to Mars. And the way things are, like I said, they already have shown astronauts walking around this studio in a warehouse, I imagine it's down in the American Southwest in the desert someplace, filming the alleged new moon landing, the Artemis moon landing. So they're already got the stage set. And I've always said this, that what you see, this quarter inch of perfectly layered dust everywhere, just like this fine dust as the lunar surface, that's not the lunar surface. I guarantee you, it is not the lunar surface. And the real lunar surface is going to have many variations, just like Earth, and just like even Mars. There's many variations, topographical variations. And on the moon, you're going to have volcanism. You're going to have impact craters. You're going to have just a lot of features that don't correspond to a nice thin layer of dust, maybe 1 inch, quarter inch. You know, when the Japanese lander landed on the moon, they sent back some pictures. The same thing, this beautiful, perfectly layered out quarter inch of dust. And, you know, no, that is not the lunar surface. And there again, that's another indication that these spacecraft are really not on the real lunar surface, because there would be dust everywhere. As soon as that powdery dust would be touched, because the lunar gravity is so low, it would be up in a cloud and it would be floating there. And once it was in the sunlight would charge this dust, and it would become electrical, and it would just coat the spacecraft, cover the solar panels. That's always interesting, too, when you see the Mars rovers. One day they're all dusty, and the next day they're all clean, like they just came out of the car wash. So anyway, maybe there's a car wash up on Mars we don't know about. But, okay, well, I'm running up against the end of this show. And just remind you that sale for the best deal, the MR5 whole house water filter best deal, the MR5 plus a UV sterilizer plus the extra pack of filter elements is going off sale this Sunday. So this is your last chance to get a really good price. And it's not going to ever change back. So anyway, go for that web page, jmccwaterfilters.com. And then go check out my new page, the jmccsci.com page, brand new. Surf around there. I don't have the archives up there yet. Anyway, this is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.